Welcome to Illinois in Focus. I'm Greg Bishop. Coming up, we'll review the week's top stories about efforts at the State House to ban certain food additives and the debate around gun control from both sides. I'll then join the Center Square's Dan McCaleb to further discuss those stories and more. That's ahead with Illinois in Focus. I'm Greg Bishop.
Attention parents, teachers, and taxpayers. Do you care about the decisions being made in K-12 public education? Do you want to know how those decisions impact your students and school district? Chalkboard News has you covered. We're delivering fact-based reporting on the policies that shape school safety, curriculum, and recovery from learning loss. At Chalkboard News, we're cutting through the politics and focusing on the facts behind the issues impacting students, teachers, and families. Get this news delivered to your inbox for free by signing up at chalkboardnews.com.
Welcome back to Illinois in Focus. I'm Greg Bishop. Here's some of the top stories from the past week. Contrasting opinions about the issue of gun control are on display at the Illinois State House this week. State Senator Selena Villanueva addressed gun control advocates Tuesday during a rally in Springfield. She said Illinois has, quote, messed up gun laws.
That we haven't been able to change because those people on the other side think that their right to carry arms is more important than our right to live.
She's advocating for a measure requiring police to confiscate firearms from subjects of a restraining order. Right now, the subject can turn over firearms to anyone with a firearm owner's ID card. Thursday, Second Amendment Foundation's Alan Gottlieb was the featured speaker for Illinois State Rifle Association's Illinois Gun Owner Lobby Day. After addressing the crowd at a convention, Gottlieb said, Illinois is key to impacting gun laws in other states.
It's a false narrative to push their anti-gun rights agenda. And the bottom line is the courts aren't going to listen to their rhetoric. The courts are going to look at the facts and the law and the Constitution.
Following a gathering at a convention center, hundreds of gun owners marched down the streets of Springfield to rally before they lobbied their legislators.
Look down the road and what do I see?
Look down the road and what do I see?
Illinois gun owners marching with me!
Illinois' ban of more than 170 semi-automatic firearms faces lawsuits in federal courts, with the U.S. Supreme Court being asked to intervene. And legislation passed the Illinois Senate this week that would ban several food additives in the state. Kevin Bessler has that story.
The measure would ban several ingredients, including potassium bromate and red dye number 3. California recently passed a similar ban, but if enacted, Illinois would have one of the strictest food additive bans in the country.
It is time we protect the health of Illinoisans, Illinois children, and families by establishing new safety guidelines for specific chemical ingredients.
That is the bill's sponsor, State Senator Willie Preston. Craig Llewellyn with the Institute of Food Technologists says states should trust the Food and Drug Administration on what additives should be banned.
The science is generally there for the most part to demonstrate safety, or that the safe use and the intended use is really the key.
The Illinois Manufacturers Association has gone on record against the proposed measure, saying it would set a dangerous precedent. I'm Kevin Bessler.
Those are the top stories from the past week from Illinois. Find more online at thecentersquare.com. Coming up for Illinois in Focus, I'll join the Center Square's Dan McCaleb to further discuss the news. This is Illinois in Focus, a production of America's Talking Network. I'm Greg Bishop.
Tired of being in the dark about what happens day to day under the dome in Springfield? Do you want to be more informed in the decision-making process? If so, you need Blue Room Stream, a live and archived video streaming service that provides access to government meetings and events. With Blue Room Stream, you can watch elected officials in action, holding them accountable, and having your say on issues that matter most to you. Blue Room Stream is the perfect way to stay informed about Illinois state government and to be a more engaged citizen. Become a subscriber today at blueroomstream.com.
Welcome back to Illinois in Focus, powered by the Center Square. I'm Dan McCaleb, Chief Content Officer at Franklin News Foundation, publisher of the Center Square Newswire Service. A man who police say was under the influence of cocaine, fentanyl, and morphine when he crashed his vehicle into a DeKalb County Sheriff's vehicle, killing Deputy Christina Musil, was released on his own recognizance under the cashless bail provision of Illinois Safety Act, infuriating law enforcement across the state and leading to calls from Republican lawmakers in Springfield to amend the pretrial release mandate. Joining me today to discuss this is Greg Bishop, the Center Square's Illinois Associate Editor. Greg, first let's discuss what we know about the details about what happened with this tragic fatal crash, and then let's talk about the Safety Act and what changes some are calling for.
Yeah, when news broke that a DeKalb County deputy's vehicle was struck and the individual in that eventually died of their injuries, more information came out about the suspect they found in a vehicle after that accident, after that crash, that fatal crash. And the fact that there was that cocktail of drugs in the suspect's blood, that really that indicated to law enforcement that this is obviously a reckless homicide case, and the individual was charged, but because of the end of cash bail in the state of Illinois, that individual was ultimately released pre-trial, and as you indicated, that has left a lot in the law enforcement community. Given Deputy Musil's death, they believe that Nathan Sweeney, 44-year-old, should have been held pending trial instead of released before he goes to trial.
Some folks have said that what occurred in this instance, that a judge has prerogative and could have held the suspect without bail. But it seems like judges across the state are leaning the opposite way when it comes like this. But anyway, tell us about what some Republicans are saying they want to see changed.
Yeah, so with the Pretrial Fairness Act, which is the measure of the Safety Act, controversial police regulation and criminal justice reform law that passed in 2021 and ultimately was put into effect over the several years, the pretrial fairness portion of it was actually challenged in the courts and put on hold for months while the Illinois Supreme Court dealt with that. It finally went into effect in September, months after it was supposed to go into effect by law. But ultimately, what the measure does is it says that there are some detainable offenses, more violent type of crimes, where a judge could say that individual is going to be detained pre-trial. But with the end of cash bail and money bond statewide, it ultimately put the pressure on state's attorneys that they had a certain amount of time, I believe it's 48 hours or so, to prove to a judge that somebody needs to be held pending trial because they are a threat to the community. Or a flight risk, for instance. So in this particular case, it seems that the judge did not find that the suspect, Nathan Sweeney, was a flight risk. But that has some in the law enforcement community scratching their head, wondering, this individual is behind the wheel, allegedly under a cocktail of drugs, including cocaine and fentanyl, and crashed into a vehicle with a deputy in it, killing the deputy. So clearly, a law enforcement think there needs to be some more detainable offenses that are put into the law. But even some Democrats, like Cam Buckner out of Chicago, who championed the Pretrial Fairness Act and the Safety Act, he said he's glad that Republicans are looking more into this because there may need to be some efforts to clean up the language to ensure that some criminal suspects don't, quote, fall through the cracks. So clearly there's still more work that needs to be done with this particular piece of legislation, because Illinois was the first state in the country to end money bond statewide. And the proponents say that it's an issue of individuals' rights to be innocent until proven guilty. And they say that nobody should languish behind bars if they can't bail themselves out. So that was the impetus of really pushing for the end of cash bond. But clearly there's still some tweaks that need to happen here, and even a bipartisan understanding that they may have to revisit some aspects of the Pretrial Fairness Act.
Yeah, Greg, Illinois is in the heart of its legislative session right now, just maybe a little bit over a month left to go. You expect anything to occur before a session wraps up at the end of next month?
You know, having covered the State House for a decade now, it's hard to predict what could possibly happen with so many weeks left. I know that the end of May seems like, you know, it's tomorrow, but there's a lot that can happen between now and then. Whether or not they come together with enough reforms or various fixes that both sides may come to terms with, that is yet to be seen. Not much of public conversation in committees about any of this, that's not to say nothing can happen, because I've seen stuff happen in just a handful of days. Very large pieces of legislation sweeping broad changes to the state law. I've seen it come together in just a handful of days. So we'll be watching closely to see if indeed they do move on anything to try to correct some of the things that even both sides see as may need to be corrected.
One last question for you on this, Greg. While Illinois, as you mentioned, was the first state with a statewide cashless bail provision, other states and local jurisdictions across the country have either followed suit or are considering doing so. They include mostly blue states such as New York, New Jersey, New Mexico. Washington, D.C. has a cashless bail provision. Los Angeles County in California also has a no cash bail provision. And the California State Assembly just recently voted unanimously to let individuals arrested by police be delivered or referred to a public health or social services organization instead of facing custody and arraignment. I know you're hyper-focused on your coverage in Illinois, Greg, but do you have any thoughts about whether tragic incidents like this one, what happened here in Illinois, will lead to others to pause such efforts?
Well, I don't know if it'll lead to states with more of a focus on criminal justice reform from steering clear of things like ending cash bail. But I think one thing that could be done is to review some of the conversations that have been had in Illinois. Like, for instance, what is a detainable offense? Should somebody who is charged with reckless homicide after allegedly having a cocktail of drugs in their system? Should they be held pending trial? So I think that really that net of detainable offenses, that grouping of different crimes that people can be accused of, there really should be a better understanding of which ones are violent, which ones could lead to somebody being a flight risk, which ones could possibly lead to that individual who's released, possibly causing harm to the community or being a threat to the community. Those are the types of things that policymakers have been debating here in Illinois, and whether or not those things, they discuss those on a more granular level in other states and other jurisdictions. I think when it comes to the list of detainable offenses, that could be where a lot of people put their focus.
Thank you for your insight, Greg. Why don't we move on, as you and I have talked in recent weeks about controversy surrounding the Illinois Prisoner Review Board. Vacancies on the board are still in the focus of Republican members of the state legislature. As I mentioned, we talked about in recent weeks, the release of a repeat domestic violent offender the day after his release on early parole by the Illinois Prisoner Review Board went out and attacked his ex-girlfriend and their child, killing the child, and that's put a spotlight on the Prisoner Review Board. And they're still, and it led to the resignation of its chair and a second board member. There are still vacancies on the board member, and Republicans are honing in on what to do next.
Yeah, so this is an ongoing conversation. As you saw last month, the tragic story of that child being stabbed to death and a pregnant woman being stabbed as well, though recovering, and what led to that. The suspect in the case was released from prison after petitioning the Prisoner Review Board and getting granted release. And there's still questions. Senate Minority Leader John Curran told us this week that there's still a lot that has yet to be known about what happened. What kinds of communication breakdown was there? Did the Department of Corrections properly provide the correct documentation to the Prisoner Review Board? Did local prosecutors send off the notice of a restraining order in timely fashion? These types of things, we still don't know all the details. So Senate Minority Leader John Curran saying we need a full accounting of this, of what happened, and that's not yet happened. And he's pushing for the governor to lead and get that information out, but also to bring a higher quality of standard for the Prisoner Review Board. So this is an ongoing issue. The Prisoner Review Board is appointed by the governor. And when you look at the vacancies, there, of course, were two vacancies last month after this tragic incident, a PRB member and the chairman of the Prisoner Review Board. But with the governor this week announcing a replacement for the executive director position, there's still other vacancies on the board. And Senate Minority Leader John Curran noted that there are still vacancies, including Republican vacancies to the board, or those who don't have any affiliation with Democrats. So clearly, there's concern with the minority Republicans at the Illinois State House that the governor is not fully constituting the board and purposefully leaving out Republicans to skew the board's decisions. And something that Curran said has shown that's not leading to good results and is actually producing some really bad results because of it.
Another big issue at the State House in Springfield, particularly over the past couple of years, but certainly before then too, is the issue of gun rights, the Second Amendment. Last year, the state enacted a gun ban on the sale of more than 170 semi-automatic guns and rifles that included accessories, magazines of certain capacities, etc. There's still legal challenges that are ongoing in federal court. This week happened to be a big week for gun rights, as both gun rights advocates, but gun safety advocates came to the Capitol this week. You were there. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so Tuesday, you had groups like Every Town for Gun Safety and Moms Demand Action, and even some groups from Minnesota heading down to the Illinois State House. And they rallied and discussed what they want to see happen with further legislation. One bill they focused on really, it doesn't necessarily deal with firearms. It deals more with homicide cases. A measure that State Representative Cam Buckner has would ultimately allow for family members of homicide victims to request that their case gets reopened if it's a cold case. So they were here at the Capitol advocating for that. But while they were here, they were also talking about other bills. And there's a lot of other legislation that's been filed at the State House, but not a lot that's actually moved. Some include requiring that individuals get another background check if they want to buy a gun, to get local law enforcement permission of sorts to buy a firearm. States mandated and sanctioned training. There's even been bills filed to have an ammunition tax or micro stamping ammunition so that it can be identified, or a whole host of other different types of measures. So clearly, one measure that they're also pushing for, those who want more gun control legislation, deals with the firearm restraining order. In Illinois, we have red flag laws where somebody could have their firearms. Essentially, they'd have to relinquish those if they're the subject of a restraining order. Now, restraining orders, it's a different type of process, but there's a time frame for when a restraining order can be implemented, and then the individual who's the subject of that has to respond to it. And in that time frame, they have to, as it is right now, give their firearms to somebody else who is eligible to take those. And it could be a family member across town who has a firearm owner ID card, or somebody else who has a FOID card. But there's an effort at the State House to try to require police be the ones who confiscate those firearms from individuals who are subjects of firearm restraining orders. Now, that measure has yet to pass, but still, the gun control advocates were at the Capitol Tuesday pushing for that. Well, today it was the gun owners' turn, and several hundred gun owners from across the states gathered at a convention center offsite from the state capitol, and they heard from Alan Gottlieb, who is with the Second Amendment Foundation. And I chatted briefly with Gottlieb, and he talked about how Illinois is really crucial to issues around the Second Amendment, because he said Illinois has really strict gun legislation and gun laws that get taken to court. And he also pointed to several Illinois cases in the past that have gone up to the Illinois Supreme Court and the U.S. Supreme Court and have been used to further challenge gun laws across the country. And then after that, that convention center gathering, they marched through the streets of Springfield and held a rally outside the Capitol. And that was today, where they had their message of securing the Second Amendment and pushing back on more gun control legislation. So clearly, this is an issue that there's a coalition on each side, and they are making their voices heard this week here in Springfield.
Another issue at the Capitol, Greg, is actually it's been a nationwide issue in recent months. At least there's been some high profile cases of squatters across the country moving into homes that they don't own or don't rent or anyone. And many states have all states have different laws addressing squatters. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis recently just signed legislation giving law enforcement and homeowners more rights when it comes to fighting squatters. There's a bill moving its way through the state legislature here in Illinois addressing squatters. Tell us about that, Greg.
Yeah, so State Senator Dave Severson, Republican from the Rockford area, he introduced Senate Bill 3658, and it had a committee hearing this week where it actually advanced unanimously, despite there being some questions about whether or not it was necessary. So what it ultimately does is it gives law enforcement more authority to remove somebody in a squatter type of situation. Dave Severson gave some examples that he said is really actually highlighting how senior citizens are the ones who are being victimized by this. He says if people are snowbirds, for instance, and they're going to Florida for the summer, then they come back and they find somebody's taken over their home. And if they try to get law enforcement involved, there could be misinformation that the particular suspect may provide law enforcement. And even the Illinois Association of Chiefs of Police were there with former Springfield Police Chief Kenny Winslow saying in situations like that, they try to debunk a story. They try to look for any kind of forced entry. They try to find some way to hold the alleged squatter accountable. But then at the end of it, it comes down to it being a civil issue, a landlord-tenant issue, and police have to walk away with their hands up saying there's nothing they can do. So after hearing various different examples of this, even with some of the Democrats on the committee saying, this may be too broad of an idea, saying that there are eviction laws already in place. But still, I think it was enough. Even some other Democrats talking about how their homes were burglarized and they can't even imagine coming home to find somebody who had been living in their home for months while they were away. So clearly, this is an issue that's making headway at the Illinois State House. Whether or not it makes it across the finish line, we'll see. But this passed out of a Senate committee unanimously, still has yet to come up on the Senate floor, and then it's got to get to the House, where surely there's going to be a lot of contentious debate about this.
We're almost out of time, but I want to touch on one more story before we close. The Democratic National Committee will have its presidential convention in Chicago this summer in August. There are widespread concerns about protests, perhaps violent protests, taking place around the activities at the convention, particularly when it relates to Israel's war with Hamas in Gaza after the Hamas terrorist group invaded Israel, killed more than 1,000 people, kidnapped hundreds of people, brought them back into Gaza. And then most recently, this past weekend, Iran sending all kinds of rockets into Israel. Thankfully, Israel defenses were able to, with America's help, shoot down many of those. But on Monday, there were violent protests that block traffic, etc., across the country, including in Chicago. And that's increasing concerns about what might happen at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago this summer. Tell us briefly about it.
Well, and it's also prompted a Republican state representative filing or intending to file legislation to make it a criminal activity where people should be forcefully removed from roads if they're blocking roads in these types of protests. Dan Ugaste files this news statement saying that he's intending to file this bill to spell out how it's improper and should be criminal and people need to be removed because first responders who are responding to a fire or a medical emergency, they can't be stopped because there's a protester standing in the middle of the street. And even Governor J.B. Pritzker indicated that people have the right to free speech, but they don't have the right to block people from moving around. And then the question came up about what this portends for the DNC this August, especially after video circulated in the Chicagoland area of organizers teaching others how to chant "Death to America" and "Death to Israel" in Farsi. That had the Anti-Defamation League speak out against it. saying it's very concerning.
Of course, it's still a few months off, but the Center Square, including yourself, plan to be at the Democratic National Convention this summer. Hopefully things stay safe. Greg, thank you for joining us today. Listeners can keep up with everything that we write about the Illinois state government and more at thecentersquare.com.